This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. This week we are joined by my teammate, Chris Paul. Let's get it. This episode of the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick is brought to you by the European Watch Company. Watches are a passion of mine. I would actually call watches an obsession of mine. One of the companies that I love and love to work with and am truly enthused to represent on this podcast is European Watch Company out of Boston, Massachusetts. When you're dealing with rare and important watches, you want to deal with a company you can trust and that represents the product accurately, which is why I love curating my collection with Joshua Ganji, the second generation family at European Watch Company. I love using the European Watch Company app for smartphones. The app is always up to date with the latest additions, including new, pre-owned, and vintage watches from all the top brands such as Patek Philippe, Rolex, Audemars Piguet, JLC, IWC, Alonga, and way more. With the latest updated inventory ready to be shipped FedEx overnight to your door. The best thing about my experience with Joshua is that you can easily sell or trade your watches by uploading a few photos of your watch through the sell or trade page. As many of you know, there always comes a time to trade your watch up for the next one. I was looking for an official watch sponsor for the podcast, and I was thrilled when Joshua reached out to me for the position. There is literally no better fit for me. I've done 5 or 6 transactions with Joshua, and they've been fantastic every time. Of course, remember to let Joshua know you are a friend of mine and you heard about European Watch Company through the JJ Redick podcast to ensure he gives you the best deal possible. Contact Joshua directly to be sure you are well taken care of. His email is easy, joshua@europeanwatch.com, and grab the app in the App Store or at europeanwatch.com. Whether you're an amateur collector or someone like myself who's addicted to watches, European Watch Company will have the watch for your budget. I am truly looking forward to my next purchase with Joshua. If you're looking for a trusted place to curate or liquidate your collection, look no further. European Watch Company is the place.
Yahoo Sports presents the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. Powered by digital media, find your voice. And now, your host, JJ Redick.
Welcome back to the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. Really excited about this week's guest. Well, I'm always excited about our guests, but really excited. My guy, CP, was nice enough to join us for an hour conversation. We talk about a lot of different things, one of which is how much we hated each other when I played at Duke and Chris played at Wake. We also talk about legacy and where CP fits in that. And, of course, we have to talk about CP and the knock that he has not gotten out of the second round and how that affects his legacy. I always find that fascinating. It's a team sport. Lastly, we are going to talk a little bit about some of the social issues and conversations going on in America. Again, this is the third week in a row we've talked about that, but it is part of the national conversation right now. And CP3, of course, given his leadership with the Players Association and the fact that he's from North Carolina, where there are protests going on right now, I think offers a very pertinent perspective on things. Before we get to CP, I just want to say one more thing. Like, I don't know if this is conveyed in the conversation, but I really did not like Chris. Like, I did not like Chris. There's one story that I didn't tell when Chris and I had this conversation. And that story is, I don't know what year this was, but it was maybe 2008, 2009, 2010, somewhere around there. And it was at a USA Basketball mini camp. And Chris Collins, who I've had on the podcast, Northwestern head coach and my assistant coach at Duke, he was helping Coach K as sort of like a workout guy with the USA Basketball guys. And so he was working out the guards. And CP and him were jabbing back and forth playfully about Duke and Wake Forest. And I don't know, I guess my name came up and CP3 said, "Tell JJ he's a bum." And he didn't mean it in like a funny sort of tongue-in-cheek way. Like he meant it literally. And for some reason, given our history, like that really bothered me. And when I first signed with LA, I wasn't sure how our relationship was going to be because of the history and because, you know, we're both wired a certain way. And CP and I hit it off immediately. It's crazy to say this because I know I've said this four or five times now on this podcast, but the friendships that I've made in LA with my Clippers teammates are literally lifelong friendships. And I'm so fortunate to have a friend like Chris. And I've said that about a few guys, Blake and DJ and Jamal. And I think everybody saw, you know, last week with Matt, how much I respect him and enjoy him. So just very fortunate to have had great teammates here in LA. And CP3 is one of them. Let's get to my conversation with Chris. All right, we are now joined by my teammate. Once again, another one of my teammates on the show, guy I've wanted to have on for a while, Chris Paul, CP3, a.k.a. the point god. Chris, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem, Bubs. Thanks for having me.
Do you feel like this is long overdue?
It definitely is. You know, for me, being as, you know, I moved, so I get this nice ride into the facility now.
Your hour and a half ride from Calabasas.
I've listened to just about every podcast you have.
I appreciate you listening, man. This is something that I've looked forward to for a while. There's a lot of good stuff that I want to touch on with you today. But I think it's important we start at the beginning.
Oh, man.
The beginning of our relationship. And you
beginning
and I,
of our relationship would go back to AAU.
Yeah. Boo Williams tournament?
Yeah. There wasn't a relationship. I was just a young fan
watching
you and John Gilchrist.
Oh, man.
Play against Jay Gray. You was playing against Justin.
Yeah. Jay Charlotte Gray. Royals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jay Gray was killing.
Yeah.
You were too, but you didn't know me at the time.
Right. I'd heard of the Kappa Magic?
Kappa Magic.
Yep. That was your AAU team.
Yep.
I heard y'all were winning a bunch of tournaments. And then I think my senior year in high school is when I first heard, you know, about your name. And then obviously my freshman year at Duke, you know, you were a McDonald's All-American and became a national story when you had 61 in the game. But when you got to Wake, and I was at Duke. I was a year ahead of you. We did not like each other.
Oh, by no means. I didn't like anything to do with you.
Like, I would say we hated each other.
Hate is a very strong word, and that is probably the correct word. Definitely the correct word.
I didn't initially. So the second time we played you guys at home on, like, a Saturday afternoon game. I think you guys had moved up to, like, the top five in the country. I think you were undefeated or one loss at the time. And we got you guys that game.
That so was we at Duke?
At Duke. This is your freshman year. And then we come back later in the year, and y'all beat us. But in the first half, you guys were being a little physical with me. And over by...
We were being physical with you?
Yeah, and over by your bench, you just started mother-effing me to my face, and you were a little too close to my personal space. And so I wouldn't call it a hit. I wouldn't call it a slap.
You know better than that.
But
you
I did put my hands on you.
You guys were full of yourselves. You guys were smacking the floor every time we dribbled the ball up the court. Sean Dockery.
Yes.
Him, Duhon, all that. You know, we just really wasn't with all that. And, you know, I was a freshman, had been there watching the games the years before. And you know what it's like in the ACC. Like, you just trained to hate each other. You know, it was a lot different then.
It was.
But, I didn't care for you running off all those screens and making the threes and dancing. If they could see me right now, they see my hands in the air twirling like you. And you had a lot more hair on your head at the time, and it was shaking. Yeah, I really wasn't with none of that.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. So this incident that happened the second game of your freshman year and my sophomore year, I got a technical for it. I tried to pull up the YouTube clip earlier.
Did I not get a tech too?
No, it was just one way.
Well, that was good.
I fouled out of the game. I had 2 points. My career low at Duke.
You had two in the game?
Yeah, I had 2 points. Y'all beat us, and then y'all, you know, stormed the floor, whatever you did.
Yeah.
But later on that year, we were at the Jordan camp in Santa Barbara. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to swallow my pride. I'm going to go talk to Chris. So I went over to you in the dorms, and I was like, hey,
that
man.
Was Adam Morrison and all them guys,
yeah,
right?
Adam Morrison, Santa David Barbara. Lee, yeah. And I apologized to you. I said, CP, I'm sorry for putting my hands on you. Just the heat of the moment. And you kind of big-timed me, because at that point, you were going to be a top-five pick, and you're like, yeah, whatever, dude.
No, because I didn't go to the NBA then.
No, it had to be the after next summer. But there's projections for the next summer. You were now a
top-five
pick. But
I still didn't know I was going to go to the NBA then, Bubs. I still didn't know.
Right.
No.
Then my junior year, we played a home game. Actually, I had a like a little Twitter thing earlier where I was like, ask me some questions on Twitter for CP3.
Yeah.
And there were some really good questions. I really appreciated all the questions. But
what's his name?
One person wrote, could a team still rattle you by starting Patrick Davidson on you?
Man. That's his name, right? Patrick Davidson.
Patrick Davidson. We started me and four walk-ons against Wake.
I'm glad we finally got a chance to have that conversation, because you know, Coach K being the coach that he is, you know, and I love Coach now, but you know that right there was all bad.
You called it thuggery, bad. I think, at one point.
That was bogus. You know that.
We started a guy, Patrick Davidson, who's a great guy.
Is he?
He's a great guy.
Is he a great basketball player?
Yeah, I think he's in Nashville now. I think he's a chef or something.
It wasn't even senior night, and he started.
No, he started, and he got into you physically. He had two fouls in a minute and a half.
Walking out there for the jump ball, he bumped into me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And we had a specific strategy for that game.
The thing I remember most about that game, you know, and I definitely, like, you know, I used to be on one, definitely. Yeah. Still am at times, but it was really bad then. But the thing that I remember the most is, how many minutes did he play? Did he even play a minute?
A minute and a half,
who
roughly.
Knows? He just roughly. Came in to foul me and do all the nonsense.
Pressure you full court.
Yeah, all that good stuff. When he came out of the game, it was like you guys had won a national championship.
Yeah.
He got a hug from Coach. I think he hugged everyone.
He got a standing ovation.
He got a standing ovation. And I was just like, man. You would think Duke is above this. Anything for a win, I guess. Anything for a win.
Desperate times call for desperate measures.
We
had lost two games in a row. It was the first time in like 6 years we had done that. So, you know, we playing y'all. Y'all were a top 10 team. We didn't want to lose three in a row, man. It's not a good look for us.
You know what? This is a good fact check. We should check. We should check and see if he ever got in the game again for the rest of that season. Can you confirm that?
Like an actual playing time? There's a difference. I mean, at the end of the game when we're up 30 or 40, I'm sure he got in the
game. He still may not have gotten in. Still may not have gotten in, Bubs. We should check. Let's
check
and see.
We'll check at some point. We're going to continue down this path, because then my rookie year, you got rookie of the year, your rookie year. Then I come in the next year. By now, you're CP3. You're going to be on the Olympic team, all that stuff. Right. And my rookie year, the first time we played y'all in Orlando, I was in a suit behind the bench, and you took time,
during the
game, to walk over to the corner of the court to say something along the lines of,
"I can tell you exactly what I said."
What'd you say?
Oh, I couldn't wait for this opportunity, because we were actually about to run a high pick and roll, and I was in the corner.
Yeah,
I was in the corner, and might have been J.R. Smith, something about to run a pick and roll, and I remember turning around and saying to you that. Times have changed. Times have changed. We are no longer at Duke and Wake. Yeah. And I apologize for that too, but now that I know you.
About 7 years later, I got an apology for that one. You really hurt my feelings. You really know how to kick someone when they're down. I hadn't dressed in a game in 2 months, and you're
really?
Just kicking me while I'm down.
Man. But for all that you did while you were at Duke, you definitely probably deserved that one.
I deserved my first 2 years in the NBA. There's no question in my mind that I did.
You're listening to The Vertical Podcast with J.J. Redick.
Peter King here, reminding you to subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, as well as the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer and the 10 Things MMQB Podcast.
Chris, as NBA players, we're always in need of a quality suit, and I need to tell my listeners about Indochino. Indochino is reinventing men's fashion. You can customize the details you want, pick your lining, lapels, personal monogram, and more. There's 14 unique measurements that go into making a suit that fits you perfectly. You can't go wrong with the well-crafted 100% merino wool suit. Also, check out their made-to-measure dress shirts and men's accessories. Made-to-measure suits are now affordable and available to the masses thanks to Indochino. When you look good, you'll feel good, and you'll feel confident. Your look, your way. So here's the deal. The code is JJ, and there's a money-back guarantee. Today, my listeners get any premium suit for just $399. That's up to 50% off at Indochino.com when entering JJ at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. There's no reason not to try your first custom-made suit with a deal this good. And a suit classic from their premium collection will look good, feel good, and last. That's Indochino.com. Use the promo code JJ for any premium suit for just $399 and free shipping. Indochino, your look, your way. Now back to my conversation with Chris Paul.
Well, fast forward to...
Even
fast forward to the summer where the trade happened.
Where I ended up here.
Where you ended up here. Fast forward to that, and we don't have to go into all the crazy stuff that happened with...
I've rehashed it with Woj on here before, with Sterling. Deciding that he didn't want me anymore.
That situation. But the phone call that I got from Doc, I'll never forget it. I was in the bathroom upstairs at my other house, and Doc was like, "We got a chance to get JJ Redick." And look at what I said. I said, "Doc, make it happen."
He gave him the vote of confidence.
I said, "Make it happen." That's because you were one of those guys that I definitely hated to play against, but would love to play with. And look at us.
It's funny how that works out, because I still have guys where I'm like, man, I really hate playing against that guy. Even guys that aren't at my position necessarily.
Yeah.
Like Reggie Evans is a guy that I always hated playing against.
Right.
But if he was ever on my team, oh my God, I'd love
He was on
him.
My team before.
I know.
Yeah.
I would love to have him on my team.
And I've always said that about KG.
Yeah.
You know, I've always said KG is one of my favorite players to ever play in the NBA. And anybody who knows me knows why. My first three or four times I played against him, we both got double techs. But I always wanted to be on the same team with him.
You and I have quite a bit in common, I think. I mean, there's the sort of the obvious stuff, you know, being ACC guys and being family men and all that stuff. But I think the way we're wired, too, I think is one of the reasons that we've been able to have a friendship. And I want to talk a little bit about that with you. Have you ever read the book, The Carrot Seed?
No.
You've never read the book, The Carrot Seed?
Never read that book.
Okay. All right. So The Carrot Seed was my favorite book when I was a child. And it's a very simple book. It's like 8 pages long. But in essence, a little boy plants a carrot seed. His mom, his dad, his brother, everybody comes up to him and says, "Hey, carrot seed's not going to grow. There's just no way it's going to come out of the ground." Little boy doesn't listen to him. Every day he goes over the carrot seed, he pulls the weeds, he pours some water. They still tell him, "Hey, it's not going to grow, it's not going to grow." And then one day, carrot comes up, and the little boy walks away with the carrot. And the reason I use that example is because there's this memory that I have when we lost to Houston 2 years ago. Game 7, we're in the locker room. You and I had lockers next to each other, and you know, everybody's upset. You're in tears. And you said something along the lines of, "I can't believe I got to do everything again. I got to do my stretches. I got to eat right. I got to play, you know, do extra shots. I got to do extra conditioning just to get back to this point." It's like that repetitiveness. It's almost mundane.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
But to be great, and I'm not saying I'm on the level of you, but to be great, you almost have to love that part of the process.
Yeah, that's definitely part of the process, which is why when I broke my hand, I walked out of the arena in my uniform. And it's because, like, Bubs, you know, we've been doing this long enough to know that we play for the playoffs and a shot at winning the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right? And think about all the sacrifices that you make on a daily basis, during the season, all the time, like you're like me in the way that you're anal about, "I gotta do this, I gotta do that, I gotta do this." And it is part of the process. And I don't think when stuff happens, like, you don't love it. It's just like, I'm this close.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's you want it so bad. You know what I mean? And I don't know. Like, it's.
But is it hard then to repetitively do the same things over and over? And they're not easy things to do, because they do require a lot of discipline and a lot of perseverance. Is it hard to do those things over and over and not get that carrot that you're looking for, that reward, which for us is an NBA championship?
Oh, it's tough, but you ain't no choice. You know what I mean? If you really want it that bad.
Have you ever been discouraged enough where you considered like, ah, maybe it's not worth it. Maybe I can take a little bit less.
Hell no.
Really?
No. Heck no. I'm just not wired like that. Like I've said it for a long time. I hate to lose more than I like to win. You know what I mean? And I don't know if it makes sense at all, but it makes sense to me. Like some people win and like they celebrate. They be like, heck yeah, I won. But for me, I just hate to lose.
I think there's, if you are a winner, I think there's a normalcy to winning.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you hate losing so much is because there's an unsettling feeling that you have.
Yeah, it's an incomplete feeling. And it's one of those things where, like you said, when you prepare for something, you expect to do it. So when you win, it's not a surprise. You know, and it's like I always say, like you've been my teammate now. Like I don't talk junk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I may be a jerk.
To the refs maybe.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's a whole nother thing. But you know what I'm saying? Like to other guys on the court, like I'm not a junk talker. Like I don't talk junk and all that stuff like that. And it's because like if I do a move or I make a shot, I feel like I've trained and worked on it so much, I expect to do that. Like no disrespect to that person, but I expect it to do that.
For you, your preparation, and I had Blake on a few weeks ago, and Blake sort of is the same way. We have a few other guys on our team that prepare to play really on a daily basis, hourly basis. For you, when was that shift in your career where you really concentrated more on what you were putting in your body, getting your tissue work? Was it after your injury? Did it take an injury to get you there, or was it just a natural process of maturation?
No, it was probably actually when I got traded out here to LA, because even after my injury, I always say I wouldn't change anything, you know what I mean? But if there's one thing that I could have changed, it would have been, I would have took my rehab a lot more serious when I did get injured. But especially at my position, no such thing as an off night.
Yeah.
So I feel like in order to compete and compete at the highest level at that position night in and night out, I gotta prepare. I have to eat right. I have to train, stay sharp defensively and offensively. But I don't know, man. It's just this will to be the best. Like, I'll never forget, and I don't want to get off topic, but I'll never forget the night before I played Steve Nash my rookie year. We were in Louisiana. We were in Baton Rouge because my rookie year, we played 3 games back in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And because of the hurricane, it was in Baton Rouge and not New Orleans. And the night before the game, I couldn't sleep because I wanted Steve Nash so bad. Like, I wanted to play against him so bad.
He was coming off an MVP, right?
I think
so. He was coming off MVP, first MVP.
But I literally, like, I couldn't sleep. Because when you're in college, I mean, when I was in college, my college coaches used to, like, give me DVDs, like, with Steve Nash on it, Jay Kidd, AI, and all this stuff like that. And, you know, me, I'm competitive. I was like, he is nice, but I want that action. You know, so I'll never forget it. I think I had 19 or something like that in the third quarter or something like that. And I just remember, like, wanting him. And now, as I've gotten older, you know, in the league, now I sort of look at...
It's reversed. Young guys come in and they're, I want CP.
Man, all the time. All the time. So my mind works like that. So I think about how I was then. So now...
Do you feel like as you've gotten older, you've had to change your game at all? This was a frequently asked question on Twitter. You know, as we age, obviously... Whatever athleticism we had in our early to mid-20s, that sort of starts to wane. And obviously your mind is what is a huge part of what makes you great. But have you had to change how you play or the way you play?
For sure. You know me. I live on IB. I live on, like, Second Spectrum and stuff like that, like just watching film. Like, I watch more film probably than anybody. And it's cool for me to go back and look and see how I used to play. Like when I was in New Orleans, man, I used to be moving. You know, and I was so fast, I didn't have to have a mid-range. I used to shoot a lot of layups and threes here and there. But I was just so fast. I was like a one-man fast break. And then my rookie year, I got undercut by Nick Collison, cracked my ribs. I used to be one of the league leaders in free throw attempts.
Yeah.
Then I was like, let me see what this mid-range game talking about. let me get into this area and stuff like that. So I definitely have changed my game.
Is there anything else in terms of your preparation as you've gotten older that you've changed? I know we talked about it a little bit earlier, but I don't necessarily mean the physical preparation. I mean more the mental side of it.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm still working on, and trust me, God's still working with me, is the referee situation. I click out during the games for sure, but I'm a work in progress on that one. But I don't know. You know, some things I think change, AJ, and we don't even pay attention to it. You know what I mean? Like, when you start having kids, like, you start going to bed earlier, and you don't even realize it. You know what I mean? You start getting more rest. But on the basketball side of it, I don't know, the game changes a little bit. Your personnel changes.
I guess it's something I've talked about on here before, but it's just being able to be constantly adaptive to sort of the situation around you. Which is interesting that you would say that, because I think from my experience, most of the really great players sort of make everyone adapt to them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And probably don't do as much adapting. But you're saying you actually do sort of adapt based on the team. Because I'm just, from my perspective, and I talked with Maverick Carter this summer about this, about sort of what makes you and LeBron great. And you can talk about the physical stuff, obviously, but what makes you guys great is that you're so smart, and the way you think about the game and the way you see the game and the way you make adjustments within the game, that is part of your greatness.
Yeah, but what I think for me is, when I got with you, I never played with a player like you. You know what I mean? Like, for me, I've been running Floppy since my rookie year. Floppy is an actual set for us. You know what I mean? Like, seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would definitely say that I've learned some things, like, watching how you and Blake played that two-man game. If you notice, was it last year? I started doing it even more.
Yeah.
You know, I've been so much having to come off ball screens and create shots for other people that, I mean, everything hasn't changed with my game. I'm still, you know, high pick and roll. You know, that's still my go-to. Or let me get the ball on the elbow or whatnot. Yeah. But I've definitely had to change certain things as far, and it's for the better.
But within a game, because we've talked about this before, and this is something I found really interesting, but within a game, you're thinking about your teammates, which, if, like, you're – like, we talk about this, and I'll knock myself a little bit, but I'm more wired to be a scorer.
We talk about it all the time. When you come off Floppy. When you come off Floppy, and my man helps off of you, and I'm like, Bubs, I'm right here waiting for this three. And you're like, hey, Bubs,
That's because every time I do kick it, you turn down the shot.
Occasionally.
Yeah. No, but
I'll
shoot
it this year.
But I'm wired like a. I'm wired to be a scorer. And so, like, you know, my mindset during the game is, like, I'm constantly hunting shots. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to make the wrong play, or if I come off a Floppy action and they hedge with the big, yes, I'm going to dump it down to DJ or Blake. But my mindset is that. And obviously, I'm worried about what the team's doing,
right.
You know, what's going on in the game, in the course of the game. Like, you're thinking about all those things. You have to manage all those things. But it just seems to me like you're managing a lot of people as well within the game. Like, you've said to me before, like, you'll pull me over. I'll have, let's say, 8 quick points in the first quarter. You'll pull me over and be like, hey, yo, let's try to get BG going. I mean, that's something that's crossing your mind many times throughout a game.
It is. It is. Just because every team is different. You know, every team is different, and you know I'm coming to you till you miss a shot. And even if you miss it, I'm probably coming back to you.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people would say that's, you know, the gift and the curse about my game. But at the end of the day, it's who I am. You know what I mean? Like, I've always had an ability to sort of pick and choose when I'm going to be aggressive, when I'm going to score. And obviously Doc has talked to me about it, and everybody's like, why didn't he just come out and shoot from the get-go? Why didn't he just be aggressive? Maybe that'll open up everything for everybody. But at the same time, also understand that, you know, you may need to get going. You know, Blake may need to get going. DJ may need to get a touch. So it's tough, but I definitely do think about that, because I guess me knowing myself and knowing what I'm capable of, I know if I get everybody off early, it may come back to me later.
I read something earlier this week about your recent trip to Springfield, Massachusetts to visit the Hall of Fame. You went for this year's Hall of Fame, you know, inauguration ceremony. You were presented with the Manny Jackson Award, which has something to do with you being an awesome human, I guess. But the article, Jackie McCollum over on ESPN wrote it, the article was talking a lot about sort of just a realization you had while at the Hall in terms of, you know, the importance of it and sort of legacy. And I'm guessing somewhere along the line you started to think about sort of where you fit in that legacy of basketball.
You know, it's funny, Bubs. I didn't ever think about where I fit in the legacy. That actually never crossed my mind, to tell you the truth. What got me emotional there at the Hall of Fame was I was with my family.
Yeah.
I was with my wife. I was with my brother, my sister-in-law, my parents. And I didn't have the kids with me. And I think that's what hit me in that when I walked around and I got a chance to look up and I seen Clarence Big House Gaines, who was the head coach at Winston-Salem State University, actually used to come watch me in high school and stuff like that. And I seen all the history of the game. And were you over here when I was talking about the first game ever? Was you in the locker room last week? Sidebar, do you know what the first score of the very first basketball game ever was?
18-18.
It is exactly wrong. It was 1-0. Like, we all know the history of the peach basket or whatnot, yeah. But I never knew that the peach basket, it wasn't cut out in the bottom.
Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, so if someone scored, they had to use a ladder to go up and get it out. So walking around, seeing all of that stuff, it hit me. And not about my legacy, it just made me think about the life that I get a chance to live.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I was like, man, if not for this game, I'm not on these private flights and in these nice hotel rooms and my family isn't able to enjoy the things that we enjoy. You know, so it really hit me while I was standing up there, like, all because of this game of basketball, it gave us the opportunity to do this.
But I feel like you've always been sort of grateful about the game, right? You always have had the perspective that the game has been good to you and your family.
Always. I've always had that, but still just being there and seeing and learning some more of the history of it. You know what I mean?
You didn't think about where you fit in.
No, not one time. I think I was excited about like being there with AI. Yeah. You know what I mean? And even Yao and Shaq.
Yeah.
But obviously more so AI because I got a chance to know him really well. And like as a kid, man, I had braids one time. I bet you didn't know that, did you? I had braids when I was in high school, man. It's because of AI. Like,
I've actually seen a photo.
Like I always say, man, people don't realize Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan and all the greats have paved the way. But AI may have impacted the game, you know, more than anybody. When I talk about the culture, you know, you got a sleeve, Bubs.
I know. That's, you know, it's crazy. I had that thought the other day. I literally had that thought the other day. I was looking at something and somebody sent me like the Sports Illustrated had like the Book of Basketball they released a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I was looking through it the other day and I was in the 90s and I was looking through and I was like, man, no one had tattoos. And then you turn to 2000, you start seeing more and more guys with tattoos. And then you get, I can't remember, the last year of the book was like 2007 or 2008. Right. By that time, nearly everybody in the NBA has tattoos. AI was the guy. And I thought to myself, I probably wouldn't have a sleeve if it wasn't for AI.
You're a product of Allen Iverson. But no, it's for real. And I always say I'm the emotional one. You know, everybody in my family knows it. So even when I start thinking about my family and all that stuff like that, I can get emotional. So being there and being there with my family and thinking about all us being together and thinking, in all actuality, the sole purpose of all of us getting a chance is this game.
So at no point in time did you think to yourself, hey, you know what? I'm gonna be here someday. I'm going to be here for my own inauguration someday.
I still got a lot of work to do. And I'm dead serious. I would tell you.
No, I know that. I know the way you're wired, but you didn't think.
I didn't think about it.
Really?
I didn't think about it while I was there. Until you just said that, I just thought to myself, like, damn, why didn't I think about that? But I was more so like thinking about my kids need to see this because.
Yeah. You know, damn, well, I know the way you are because I've talked about Jamal all the time on this podcast being like obsessed with basketball and basketball being his drug, but I would put you sort of in the same category as Jamal, because not in the same way, you're not going to go play pickup 365 days a week at the local Y, but you are basketball obsessed. Basketball is such a big part of your life. So I could see where, you know, just being in that atmosphere and seeing sort of the history of the game and putting everything in context would be an overwhelming experience.
Yeah. So the first thing that I did while I was there, after I was going, I sent on a group text to a few of my boys and was like, yo, have y'all been here? I sent them a text. I was like, have y'all been to this Basketball Hall of Fame? Because I was like, you gotta come see it.
So do you think about your legacy at all? Have you begun to start to think about that and where you fit in amongst the great players, great point guards?
At times I do. At times I'd be lying if I say I don't, because I'm crazy competitive.
Yeah.
But for me, I got a one-track mind.
Yeah.
And you already know what that is.
That's here and now.
Yeah. Like, I got a one-track mind, and that's to win a championship. Like, that's all I think about. Like, my wife, you can ask Jada, like, I'll be sitting at the house, like, just sitting there, and she'll be like, what you thinking about? And she already know.
Yeah.
She already know. And it's going to sound crazy. And yes, I'd be so happy to have achieved that. But I would love to do it for our team and everybody that would be involved. But even more so than me, and you know how I am about my family.
Yeah.
I want to win so bad for them.
Yeah.
No, like, for real. Yeah. Like, my family's so down for me. Like, my mom, my dad, my wife, my brother. And when I think about the process, I don't think about just me. You know what I mean? I think about everybody that's along for the ride. Like, my chef, Song, whether it's Courtney, Candace, Carmen, all these different people.
I think I said this to y'all 2 years ago when we had our pre-playoff dinner at Mastro's, and DJ recounted the story on the podcast. But I think when you think about winning, you obviously think about, in a team sport, you think about winning because it's important for yourself. You know, you want that label, NBA champion. You want to be known as a winner. But to me, it's more important, exactly what you're saying, in that it's really more about the other people, whether it's your teammates or whether your family, like your dad, whatever it may be. And sort of the impact that it has on them and doing something together. Because I also know for you, like, you have so many people in your life that help you, that you have, your team extends outside of sort of the Clippers.
Right.
It does.
Right, no question.
And so to win would be as important to them as it would be to, say, me.
No question.
As your teammate.
Like for us, and especially our team, because we've been through so much.
Yeah.
It would be unbelievable to think about where we started and where we are now. But there was once upon a time, not going to lie, where I used to actually care what people said. You know, I used to be like, man, are they saying that about me?
Yeah.
I was like, what? I will fry him. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I've gotten past that, and I'm so happy for it, but I've gotten past that. And it's literally about winning, and it's about winning it for us.
So when someone says that CP hasn't been out of the second round and hasn't advanced to the conference finals,
I'd be like, you're damn right.
That doesn't bother you?
Well, it bothers me.
I know it bothers you. You're saying that it doesn't bother you that someone's saying that.
No.
Obviously, but does
once upon a time, yeah, but no, not now.
But does that, has that now, you're going into year 12, you're a year ahead of me, yeah, so year 12. Right. Is that now become a burden at all? Like, no. Is that something where, all right, it's weighing on me now? Like, I've only got so many chances left.
That's not
to get out of the second round.
That's not weighing on me. It's just the simple fact that, because my thing is like, do you get past the second round and be like, that's it.
Now I get labeled a conference finalist.
Right. Like, for me, is to win a championship. Yeah. Like, I feel like I've been able to do the all-star thing. The first teams and all that stuff like that. Like, I want to win a championship. Like, I want that feeling. Like, you know, we pay attention. Like, we see what it's like. And
it's a little sickening every summer to watch other people celebrate. It's sickening. It's hard to watch. It's hard to watch.
Bubs, you have no clue.
Yeah, it's hard to watch.
You have no clue. But at the end of the day, not gonna stop working. You know, I'm not gonna stop working and trying to get there. And the other thing too is I always think about one of our first workouts together. We were here at the facility and we was running sixes. Mm-hmm. You remember we was running sixes and
it was when we still had a quote unquote conditioning test and we would run sixes. So for the listeners, a six is six lengths of the court. Guards, I think you got to run it in 32 seconds. Bigs, I think 33 or 34 seconds. And then you get a minute break in between each six.
Yeah, and I think we had ran four sixes or something like that, four or five sixes. Yeah. And, well, we ran four, and then Rich said, if you guys make the time in this fifth one, then we don't have to do the sixth one.
Yeah.
And we made the fifth one, and I never forget you being right there saying, no, we're going to run another one. It's like, no shortcuts.
Yeah.
I never forget it. Like you said, no shortcuts. And you probably don't even know. I remember that. Like, that's something that always stuck with me.
I'm getting goosebumps right now. Yeah.
Because, like, for me, like, when you talked about enjoying the process and stuff like that, you get to a point where you're not competing against somebody else.
Yeah.
You're competing against yourself. You know what I mean? So I think about that every time we work out, every time we train or whatnot. It's like, I'm trying to be better than I was yesterday. You know what I mean? And it don't matter if somebody in here watching or not or whatnot, because I know how hard I've trained. And then when we come together as a team, it's like we know how much work we put in. That's why I feel like when you do win it, it's got to be a hell of a feeling.
This is the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick.
CP, hold on a second. I have to tell my listeners about Outdoor Voices. Outdoor Voices is the activewear apparel brand for the guy who believes he could definitely nail an NBA three first try, for the guy who catches a foul ball without dropping his beer, for the guy whose last mile is faster than his first mile, and who every four summers convinces himself his Olympic dreams aren't quite extinguished just yet. It's the activewear apparel for the guy who's still got it. They've sourced the best technical fabrics in the world to produce streamlined gear that's built to last, from the first sweat to the final whistle. Plus, it looks great without trying. It's called Technical Apparel for Recreation, top-notch activewear made for everything from trotting the bases at Beer League Softball to pushing the last miles of your next half marathon. You already get free domestic shipping and returns, but we'll sweeten the deal. Go to outdoorvoices.com/JJ, and Outdoor Voices will give you 15% off your first purchase with the coupon code JJ. That's outdoorvoices.com/JJ and enter coupon code JJ at checkout for 15% off your new favorite high-quality activewear. Let's get back to my conversation with Chris. We have several new coaches on our staff this year, and it's really interesting because, you know, we just go about our work. We just do our work.
Right.
And I don't really think anything of it. It's my job.
Right.
I enjoy doing it.
Right.
I work. And it's interesting to me because we've had now two or three coaches this summer, two or three of the new coaches this summer, and they've said to me, this is the most professional, hardworking team I've ever – I mean, it's September.
Right.
And this is the most professional, hardworking team I've been around. All you guys just want to be in the gym working on your craft.
Yeah.
Man, those are the people I want to play with.
No question, because we love it. We know that about each other too, and we all going to push each other, but we got to put it together.
I know.
You know what I mean?
One more thing about personal legacy – in the context of a team sport, do you think it's fair that, and really it's in the NBA, I think, maybe because I'm of course have a bias, but I think it's in the NBA more than other sports because the star is such a vital piece that when a star doesn't win a championship, he gets sort of unfairly labeled. He gets put into a category. He can't be in the greatest of all time conversation unless he's won a championship. In a sport that requires teammates,
right.
But also, I'm just going to say it, an incredible amount of luck. Define luck however you want it, but it is.
Yeah, you should have went and played tennis or golf or something, right?
Right.
No, I think, I don't know. Like, I've been in a barbershop. I've been everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, it's conversation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's part of it, because when you do win it, you know, everybody talks about how good you were, you know, as a star. And one thing that I've learned and being a quarterback when I was played football, and being a point guard is that you got to take the good with the good, and you take the bad with the bad, you know. And if you can't handle it, then
so you
tough luck. So
you're okay shouldering. I don't want to say the blame, because that I don't think you've ever been blamed at any point in your career. I'm not saying the blame, but you're okay sort of shouldering that burden.
No question, because that's part of the responsibility in being the leader.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because like you said, if you win it, they're going to be like, the stars did it for them. So when you don't, I mean, it's part of it. But the toughest part is, can you take it? That's the toughest part. And I've been lucky enough to have, like I always talk about my team, my wife, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'll tell you situation, Bubs, that game five.
Yeah,
at
I was just going to ask you about this.
Game five at Oklahoma City might have been one of the toughest losses for me ever in my career. Ain't no secret. I'll never forget it. Man, the locker room.
It was a very solemn locker room. I felt so bad for you on the bus. I just remember you coming on the bus and just, it was a very, very sad moment. Of the three, since I've been here, because I know you guys had two disappointing losses to Memphis, or Memphis 1 year and then San Antonio the next year. But in the 3 years and sort of these, you know, meltdowns or catastrophic things that have happened to our team, I'm, of course, being tongue-in-cheek there, but which of the three were the toughest to deal with? The OKC loss, losing to Houston, being up 3-1 and losing that series, or last year dealing with the injuries?
Hell, all of them. All of them.
Same. In a different way?
All of them, same for me. But that one at OKC was tough just because, you know, the flight home, the ride to the plane. And then when I got home, you know, that's the thing too. Like, my wife, like, she had to get up, you know what I mean? Because I came in and I was hysterical, you know what I mean? But it's part of it. It's part of it. And like I say, one of these days, we win that thing. It's those memories right there that's gonna have me emotional all over again.
The you'll be flooded with those memories and those emotions from the loss.
Yeah,
it's almost like there's this really powerful built up river.
Yeah,
and there's this fucking dam.
We just can't seem to break through. It's just part of this amazing book that we're trying to write, Bubs. That's what it is. We're just trying to put more chapters in it. Right?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Well, I thought, yeah.
Well, let's finish this damn book. We got enough info for this book.
Oh, my gosh. I was at this conference in Napa this year, and I had a chance to sit next to Lloyd Blankfein, who's the CEO of Goldman Sachs.
Right.
And
right Goldman's, up your alley.
Right it was right up my alley. But I got, it's incredibly enough, I don't know how this happened, but I got like 20 minutes of one-on-one time with him. And Goldman Sachs is a constant target of sort of snickering and haters and all that, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And they take a lot of heat from a lot of different places, and he's taken a lot of heat personally. And so I kind of asked him about that, about being able to take it. Is there anything that can sort of mold you to be able to take it? And specifically like the criticism, and you were just talking about, yeah, I can take it, I can shoulder it. And it was really interesting. He said, you can't prepare for it. You either can take it or you can't. And then you find out when it happens. When it happens, you find out, can I handle it or can I not handle it? And obviously he can handle it and you can handle it and I think I can handle it, but a lot of people can't handle it. And I'm reading this book right now. You should read this book, Grit. Have you read the book, Grit?
No.
Angela Duckworth, she's this like incredibly bright, intelligent woman. She's a MacArthur fellow, but she's a psychologist who did all these studies on sort of how people become successful. And her theory is that it's grit is sort of the most important determining factor of success. And it's perseverance and passion. And so passion, sort of the mundane actions that we do repetitively over and over again, being in the gym, shooting shot after shot after shot. And then the second part of that is the perseverance part, is where a lot of people, when they fail, they give up or they don't do it as they don't prepare as well the next time.
I completely agree. And, you know, for me, like I always say, it's the mental toughness aspect of it. You know, half the drills that I do when I'm out there shooting, just like that 5, 4, 3, 2. It's the mental toughness aspect of it. And for me, you know, I think damn near everything is mental. You know, I used to tell you that about like something would be hurting and they'd be like, here, take this or whatnot. And I'd be like, oh, that's a placebo. You know, it's just all in your mind. You know, so I completely agree. And then the other side of it too, and I know I keep on saying this, but it's also the people around you, Bubs. You know what I mean? Like if something happens, right? And
something happened means something disappointing happened.
Yeah, if something disappointing happens, yeah. Like a setback or something like that, or if you don't play well, or somebody saying you're not good or something like that, and you always got people around you who's like, man, hell with them. You know what I'm saying? Like, dang, you know what I'm saying? You got yes men or people like that that's just always going to tell you what you want to hear. Then you going to be like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, seriously, like, that's what I can say about my brother, like my older brother. Like, if I have a bad game, guess what? He going to tell me.
Yeah.
You know, and guess who else going to tell me? Lil Chris. Yeah, he going to tell me. But
is your first thought when you have a bad game, is it me, or is it how do I deflect this somehow?
Because I have a bad
game. No, but I'm serious because I think a lot of I've played with guys who are really good who their first instinct is always to deflect and say, the coach did this, or you know, this guy should have made this shot.
No, that's definitely not. And that's one of the things when you got to like be, if you can take it.
Yeah.
If you can take it, because you know, Bubs, like when you're the leader or something like that, yeah. Sometimes it might not be your fault, but you got to take it.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you got to be able to do that. And then my first thought, first of all, in a bad game is, did we win or did we lose? You know? Because yeah. Sometimes, like, if you're okay with having a good game and y'all losing, then you're a loser. You're a loser. And that happens in our league. Am I right?
Yeah.
You know, some people okay with dropping 30 or 40 and losing.
There's some – I really believe this. There's some guys that are okay being on bad teams year after year as long as they can play their game and put up their numbers.
Yeah, I ain't with it. I'm not with it. I'm not – like you know – If you go out and get 30 and I have 8 and we win,
yeah,
I'm cool. Yeah. But it's just it's a different mindset too. Cause I don't know, when you've been in the league long enough and you don't know what it's like to win a championship and you haven't won, it's by any means necessary.
Yeah,
it's by any means necessary.
Willing to try anything.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick.
Chris, give me a minute to tell my listeners about SeatGeek. As a lot of you may know, buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time, but SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. I had the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I just used it the other day to look for tickets to see the Rams play. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. Enter promo code JJ. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code JJ today. All right, let's get back to CP3. You've mentioned leadership a few times. You're one of the best leaders we've had in our league. Amongst other things, you're the head of our Players Association, but you've also begun to be a leader on social issues. And you and Melo and D-Wade and LeBron made a statement at the ESPYs this year, which I thought was great. I'm curious how that all came together and you know, who said, let's do this? Was this a conversation? I know that you guys all have like a group chat together, but is this a conversation that y'all had like, hey, we need to do this. It needs to happen now. Let's go to ESPN. Let's make it happen.
We talk about different stuff all the time, right? And obviously we go on a trip and stuff like that during the summer. But Melo posted that picture he posted on Instagram. He posted a message talking about some of the social issues on it. And in our group chat, we started talking. It might have been Bron. I can't remember, but we talked about the ESPYs and saw it as a platform, saw it as an opportunity to do this. And we got on a conference call, talked about it, talked about the different things that each one of us wanted to say. Because when you're doing something like that, you don't want to all talk and say the same thing. So, you know, ESPN allowed us to use that platform, and we did it. And I think the biggest thing for us was all about starting a conversation.
Yeah.
Starting a conversation, bringing awareness to it. And the part that blew my mind the most was that me and my wife went to the ESPYs. My kids were home with the sitter. And I never forget, like, sitting there at the ESPYs, and Malenzi sent me and Jada a picture of little Chris watching it.
Yeah.
You know, I actually posted it.
You posted it, yeah.
I posted it, and I got goosebumps because, you know, my kids could have been at home, you know.
Watching Umizoomi.
Umizoomi Toy Store, something like that. I don't know. They could have been watching.
Blazing the Monster Machines.
Yeah, but to know that he sat there and watched that was pretty cool. But crazy, all these different things that's happening.
Yeah, so there's obviously a platform for us to sort of have our voices be heard. There's, of course, the people that say, you know, athletes should just stick to sports and not say anything. There's also people that just hate athletes just for no reason. Yeah. So that's a whole different thing. But I think if we're in this position to do good and we have that opportunity, we should take advantage of it. Right. The thing that I think I struggle with is, like, how do you go beyond the conversation? Do you know what I mean by that?
I know exactly.
Kaepernick is doing, I think, is great. You can argue all you want about whether it's disrespectful of the flag. I don't really care. I think it's irrelevant. But what he's doing is great because he's starting a conversation. He's now gone beyond that in a way that he saw fit with his, you know, donations to charities and hoping to do work in the community. But, like, how do we go beyond just saying stuff?
Bubs, I had this conversation for a while now, and even I had my partner summit this past week, and at the end of it, we really just opened it up because I wanted to talk about it with all my brand partners in how can we really make an impact on all these social issues, because the things that Colin Kaepernick are doing are amazing because it's continuing the conversation, But I told them, I said, in all honesty, I'm tired of talking about it.
Like,
we really have to start to try to make change. And I actually called a few close friends of mine and had some discussion with them. I actually talked to a former teammate of mine, David West. We had a long talk yesterday just talking about different ways to actually make change, because the conversation is good and well, but at the end of the day, what I personally think is that we don't have the right people in the conversations.
Yeah, like, that's a great point. The other thing with the conversation is you and I can have a conversation. At the end of the conversation, it doesn't necessarily mean you agree with what I'm saying or vice versa. It doesn't necessarily change my opinion. And if I was born and I learned racism and that's how I grew up, and then you and I have a conversation, that doesn't change, then the point of the conversation really didn't do anything.
Yeah, and what has to change is what is happening.
Right.
You know, the fact,
You
can't explain all of these shootings. You know, you can't just say it's a coincidence and all this stuff like that. Like, the part that really stuck with me and hit home is how the bomber in New York, you know, came out, you know, unscathed.
Right.
You know, but then you got a man here who's been shot and killed, and a lot of things is happening right now. People want answers and stuff like that. Like, this is going on in Charlotte, North Carolina. That's where my family is.
Right.
My family's there in North Carolina. But we have to protest peacefully wherever that is, you know, no matter where it is. But change has to happen. And in the conversations that I had, it has to start somewhere. It has to start somewhere. And for you having kids and me having kids, right now this is their normal.
Yeah.
Every day I wake up, me and my wife, we wake up to CNN, and every morning you don't know what you're going to see. And yeah, it's crazy now, but if this continues to happen, what do you think it's going to be like for our kids?
Look into a country that has, you know, not as much history of racism, and you look into a country that maybe has better gun control laws, and you think about moving there. I'm being serious.
No, I know. No,
I'm being dead serious. So Chelsea and I have already talked about this. I mean, it's not. We're not in the serious planning phase of it, but it's something that you have to consider. I mean, our country is great. Don't get me wrong. And I think a lot of it is you can't say you're overreacting to what you're witnessing, because what you're witnessing, these videos are so disturbing. You're not overreacting. But in the context, our country still has good qualities. Let's not say America's terrible. Our country has problems,
So we need to address those problems.
I did an interview the other day, actually the day before this last incident happened. It may have been for Time, Magazine. They were asking me questions about why athletes are more comfortable speaking up now than they were before. And they were asking these questions, and why do people pay a lot more attention? From my own personal observation, guys are a lot more comfortable now and a lot more aware. Like in this world of social media and phones and Twitter and everything like that. Well, this is the thing that I thought about. Things like this have been happening for years.
Yeah.
But now we're all getting an opportunity to see it and form our own opinions. You know, it used to be this is what occurred and someone may write something up and this is what happened on paper, right?
Like the Baton Rouge. Let's say the Baton Rouge shooting that happened recently, right? There was one in Baton Rouge, right? That may not have made it out of Louisiana.
Right.
And
20 years ago, what would have happened is the write-up would have been what we all thought happened. Mm-hmm. You know, he had this, he had that, or he didn't have this. But now we're getting an opportunity to see actual video of it.
Yeah.
You know, so when you see a guy standing there with nothing in his hand and all that stuff like that, now, you know, how do you expect people not to be upset and be mad? Because now you can't flip that story.
I just want to say this. I've got a ton of respect for our military. I've got a ton of respect for law enforcement. I think law enforcement has an incredibly difficult job to do in any situation. We take this, you know, awareness classes every year,
right,
where they bring in officers, you know, from local police departments.
My uncle's an officer. Yeah. My mother-in-law.
And the thing that always sticks out with me is when you're pulled over, and we get pulled over, is just to be as compliant as possible. Put your hands where they can. This is training that we have to go through.
Yeah.
And
I had a situation a couple years ago.
And the reason is because officers, and let's say it's at night, like officers, as they approach your car, some of them are scared shitless. They don't know what you have in that car. They don't know who's in that car. They don't know what's going on. So there are two sides. I'm just saying there are two sides to the story. But again, it goes back to what we've witnessed, the videos we've witnessed. It's pretty evident.
Yeah, like we all definitely have to do better, but you know, there may need to be more training and all that stuff. Like that. It's pretty easy to become an officer, and let's not say that, you know, all officers are bad, because like I said, I have family members who are officers, but at the same time, you know, like you're saying, they got to be prepared and stuff like that. When they like this, Bubs,
I'm with you.
Yeah.
This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate the time. I'll see you tomorrow at the gym. All right.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Finally. This was long overdue. I'm glad we got to hash out our Duke Wake Forest days. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. I'd really like to thank today's guest, Chris Paul. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to the podcast. And be sure to subscribe to the Vertical Podcast with Woj and the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and you can now hear the Vertical Podcast Network every weekday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. My podcast airs on Sirius XM every Monday and Thursday, the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix every Tuesday, and the Vertical Podcast with Woj every Wednesday and Friday. Like always, you can tweet me at JJ Redick for any questions and comments. And I'd really like to thank everyone who sent in comments for today's episode with Chris Paul. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, European Watch Company, Outdoor Voices, Indochino, and SeatGeek. Be sure to support them the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. I'll catch you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.